Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program. My name is Wenjiko Mwaura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. We are live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. You can also follow us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Coming up on the program, Zimbabweans head to the polls in a landmark election to choose between an old guard, an incumbent, Emmerson Mnangagwa, and the youthful Nelson Chamisa from the opposition Movement for Democratic Change. We hear from a correspondent.
When Nelson Chamisa arrived in his constituents where he has been voting since 2000, there was a lot of jubilation. Everyone was around, I think, forgot about all their miseries and they were happy.
And we'll also hear what ordinary Zimbabweans are expecting from this election.
Us as youth, we are sick and tired of the old government.
The election went peacefully, but I'm not quite sure in rural areas. But here in Harare, everything is quite peaceful.
Interesting comments there from the voters. Not only in Zimbabwe were people voting for a new president, but also in Mali, although militants disrupted the vote there by firing mortar attacks.
It's an action-packed program, but first, let's listen to some other stories making headlines around the world.
I'm Crispin Mwakideo with the DW News. Zimbabwean voters have cast their ballots in a tightly contested historic election. It is the first time since independence in 1980 that former President Robert Mugabe is not on the ballot. Speaking to reporters after voting, President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is facing a stiff challenge from opposition leader Nelson Chamisa, exuded confidence and lavished praise on the overall election process.
I'm happy that both the process for campaigning was peaceful. The voting today is peaceful. I have no doubt that the end process of the entire electoral process will remain peaceful.
Despite those claims by Mnangagwa, the EU observer mission said in some cases the election was totally disorganized. Staying on the subject of elections, attacks by gunmen and other forms of violence disrupted around a fifth of Mali's polling stations during Sunday's presidential election. In one attack, militants fired 10 mortar rounds, one of which exploded about 100 meters from a polling station, causing voting to be temporarily suspended. Spiraling jihadist violence was a key issue in the election, which pits incumbent President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita against Soumaila Cisse. Counting is underway and final results are expected this week. Tajikistan on Monday said the deaths of four tourists may have been a deliberate attack. The four cyclists from the US, Switzerland and the Netherlands were killed by a hit-and-run driver. Reports in local media say the suspects were armed with knives and attacked the tourists after the car hit the cycling group. Two of the suspects were later killed by security forces, according to Tajik officials. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. To Nigeria now, where President Muhammadu Buhari has deployed 1,000 security personnel to fight increasing banditry in the northwestern region. For more on this story, here's DW correspondent Muhammad Alamin.
A renewed attack by armed bandits in Zamfara state who targeted over 15 communities has left over 50 people dead in the last 3 days. No fewer than 37 persons were killed after a similar attack on Thursday last week, even as a team of combined security agents have been dispatched to the villages to scout for the littered dead bodies for burial. About 3,500 residents of Zamfara have fled to neighboring villages in Katsina state. Some residents I spoke to accused security agencies in the country of failing to prevent the killings.
Muhammad Alamin. And we end this bulletin on a positive note after Eritrea and Somalia agreed to establish diplomatic ties following more than a decade of animosity. The declaration comes just 3 weeks after Ethiopia and Eritrea declared an end to 2 decades of conflict. For more news and information, visit dw.com or download the DW app on Apple and Google Play. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
You are still listening to DW's Africa Link program live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Wenjiko Mwaura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe, also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
And I see a comment here from Shane Gush, who's asking, what's the latest news, Isaac?
Well, Wenjiko, the latest to answer Gush's question is that the head of the European Union mission monitoring Zimbabwe's elections says his team has seen huge differences in the pace of voting at polling stations. And so, Without much ado, we begin today's program right there in Zimbabwe, where people voted in landmark elections to elect a new president. It is the first time in nearly four decades that the name Robert Mugabe was absent from the ballot paper.
And with 23 candidates vying for the top job, the tight race is between the two presidential frontrunners, Emmerson Mnangagwa and Nelson Chamisa.
Right, indeed. Many hope that the elections will bring long overdue change to Zimbabwe, which is suffering from high unemployment and an economy in meltdown. DW's Columbus Mavunga was at the venue where Nelson Chamisa cast his ballot and has been telling Miwanjiko what transpired there. Let's listen to him.
When Nelson Chamisa arrived in his constituents where he has been voting since 2000, there was a lot of jubilation. Everyone was around, I think, forgot about all their miseries, and they were happy, hoping to just have a glimpse or just rub shoulders with him. Then he cast his vote and said he was hopeful that victory for him is certain.
We understand that his party, the MDC, has been complaining that some of its supporters, especially in urban areas, were blocked from casting their ballot. What more can you tell us about that?
Around Harare, where I've been mainly today, there are quite a number of people who have been told by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission that they cannot vote because they are not on the voters' roll. Besides being alerted by the same organization that their names were in the voters' roll and they were supposed to vote today, I happen to be one of them incidentally, but well, that's a story for another day.
And what are his supporters saying, you know, about the whole intimidation from Mnangagwa, who I understand said that those who are voting for Mugabe are actually voting for Chamisa in disguise?
People are saying Mnangagwa thinks that he owns people and he owns Zimbabwe, that anyone who doesn't vote for him does not have his senses right. MDC people that I've talked to around, they are not happy about it.
Well, that was Columbus Mavunga.
Now, Isaac, we also caught up with DW's Privilege Mshangiri, who was in the area where former President Robert Mugabe cast his vote. And he starts by describing the mood on the ground. Let's take a listen.
A huge number of people came out today to cast their votes. First-time voters were ecstatic about voting. It is interesting, even if you speak to elders, they are even saying this election is with a difference because previously a lot of young people would stay away from the elections. But this time around, they registered in numbers and also came out in numbers to cast their votes. I spoke to a number of young people from the time when the polling stations opened at 7 a.m. in the morning, and the views are interesting. Here are some of the views that I got throughout the day.
I'm very happy. I just hope maybe we'll be able to bring a new change into our country, because us as youth, we are sick and tired of the old government.
The election went peacefully, but I'm not quite sure in rural areas, but here in Harare, everything is quite peaceful.
I just, at the end of the day, I want Zimbabwe to win. I don't care who wins. I'm going to support whoever wins. At the end of the day, it's my country that matters.
And it's not only Zimbabweans, first-time voters and older voters who are excited about the process of the elections in Zimbabwe. What is the international community saying about it?
Most of the international observer missions that are in the country have commended the country for the peace it has exhibited. We even spoke to the head of EU election observer mission in Zimbabwe, Elmer Brok. Here is what he said.
What we heard from our observers in the countryside, and also what I have seen myself, and the opening is that the opening was in order. That I must say, we have seen the ballot boxes, we have seen that we have sealed the ballot boxes. We saw that all the party representatives have agreed to that it was in order, also the opposition. So that's a special point.
Now, we come back to the elephant in the room. Former President Mugabe, although not on the ballot paper, is still very present in this election. Just on the eve of the elections, he made a statement saying he would not be voting for his party, ZANU-PF. What is the effect of the Mugabe factor in this election?
The effect of his announcement, there are now fears that it can play to the positive for the opposition. It can swing votes for them. But the other factor is that people are now afraid that his coming into the picture can also jeopardize the peace that was now in the country, because those people that forced him to step down would not want to see him coming through the back doors.
That was Privilege Mshangiri in Harare, Zimbabwe.
Now, Wanjiko, some interesting comments on Twitter. Alex Mack says, Mr. President, you voted with your scarf with the party colors on. And the rule says you must be 300 meters away from the polling station. However, there is someone called Humble African who says, thank you for the 7 months you have been president. Enjoy your retirement.
Well, actually, it's on this comment. We move from Zimbabwe to West Africa, where Malians also voted on Sunday in a crucial presidential election as attacks disrupted polling in areas already beset with deadly ethnic and jihadist violence.
Now, despite the deployment of 30,000 security personnel throughout the country, several incidents were reported in the north and center. Africa Link has also been up to date with developments there, and that's why I spoke to our own Catherine Gensler in the capital Bamako about the general situation at the moment.
In the northern parts of Mali, there had been incidences that, for instance, close to Timbuktu, ballot boxes got stolen. And we also have reports that voters got intimidated by people. So it's still not clear how many polling stations were opened so far. But in general, the European Union just said yesterday evening there were no major incidences recorded. But the European Union is calling on the government to publish a list of all the polling stations that didn't open yesterday.
Now, with over 20 candidates vying for the presidency against President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, or IBK as he's commonly known, is there any chance that the opposition will win this election, or it's already a foregone conclusion for the incumbent?
That is still too early to say. People here thinking that there will be a runoff, but we have to wait until tomorrow. Then the first results will be published. And it seems as if there is a runoff between the president and Sumaila Sise. He's the most popular and most well-known opposition leader here in Mali.
What have observers been telling you about the voting exercise in general?
In general, we can say it was better than people expected. At the beginning, people questioned if it's really possible to execute elections in the northern parts of Mali, and that was much better than people thought. Still, we have to wait to see the voter turnout. Most likely, it is very low. Last time, it was about 43%, and most likely, this time, it's even less.
I was speaking to Catherine Gensler in Bamako, and just like you heard her say, we will just wait and see the results and perhaps bring you the story and also the comments, your feedback about it. Wanjiko, let's go back to the hot cake. That's Zimbabwe.
Yes, Zimbabwe. Now, David Onsero is commenting on our Facebook Live saying, Zimbabwe is a very interesting case. I take the view that Mnangagwa is better for Zimbabwe today. Firstly, he's part of the system that created the mess and he knows best how to fix it. In other words, if you break it, you own it. Well, what more are we receiving on this point?
I like the sarcasm in these comments and the irony. Davis Verum says, good luck and I'm confident you'll win this election. He's talking about Mnangagwa. Regardless of the outcome, you've been an exemplary leader. You put Zimbabwe back on the world map and for good reasons too. But you must go to retirement.
You know, we are receiving lots of comments about the ongoing process in Zimbabwe right now. If you're just joining us, we are following the elections in Zimbabwe where they're electing a new president. And who will it be between the two top candidates, that's Chamisa and Mnangagwa, who are going head to head?
Yes, will it be the old guard or the youth? Tell us what you think by going to our Facebook page, DW Africa. And of course, we will read your comments whenever we can. Another comment coming in here from someone called Tendai, but not Bitty. He says, you had a good run, Mr. President. May the voice of the people be respected no matter who wins this election. So, Wanjiko, you feel, you know, they are appreciating what Mnangagwa did.
Yes.
At the same time, they are urging him to respect the outcome of the vote. And just to bring you update or to speed what the EU has been saying, the head of the European Union says Zimbabwe's elections, his team has seen huge differences in the pace of voting at polling stations. In some polling stations, it is quick, while others, it is really slow. Keep the momentum and the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Welcome back to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Wanjiku Mwaura. We're also live on our Facebook page. Feel free to leave your comments on the story we are covering, and we'll read them whenever we can. And I see live we also have Erikon Jombos, who's typed, I'm listening. Where are you listening from? Tell us. Let us know. Tare, we also see you. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, coming up in the next 15 minutes, civil society groups in Uganda condemn a government plan to introduce compulsory HIV testing for adolescents as it infringes on rights to privacy.
If those who are sick are not going to be treated separately from those who aren't sick, then why is it compulsory to test anyway? That means they are making a compulsory testing, not necessarily for statistics, but to find a way of handling those who have HIV.
And as usual, every Monday we treat you to another dose of sports. This time it's not the World Cup, but what Africa has been up to in regarding to football.
And Isaac, we shall come back to that. But first, to South Sudan, where a move by the government to approve a car loan of $40,000 to each member of parliament has been met with public outcry due to the current economic situation.
In a country that is facing a string of challenges like starvation, internally displaced people and high levels of poverty, many South Sudanese think it is a wrong move that the government should rather focus on issues that benefit ordinary people.
As DW's Wake Simon Woody reports, South Sudan has 400 lawmakers, which means that the government in Juba will have to part with $16 million, money that it doesn't have in its coffers. His report begins with the voices of concerned citizens.
Our economic situation is really terrible, whereby some families go without food sometimes for 2 days. If I was to be in their feet or their shoes, I would first say, before I request for that money, let me maybe have a motion on how to see the situation of our citizen, or how the government should resolve the economic crisis that we are in.
As citizens of South Sudan, we need to know our rights, and we need to campaign against this. If possible, the power of the people is much stronger than the people in power.
Those are voices of some South Sudanese citizens in the capital, Juba, reacting to the government decision to allocate a total of $16 million as a car loan for the country's 400 members of parliament. Despite the harsh public criticism, Attorney Wake Attorney President Salva Kiir's spokesman strongly defends the government's decision.
And the MPs were given this money as of right, and it is a loan for them to repart. Because you cannot see the MPs, you know, walking on foot, sometimes using border border, which is the motorbike, and it is dangerous for them. And they are the ones representing the country and representing the people. And so they represent the sovereign of the country. So it was a payment done to the right people at the right time.
Attorney says the loan is expected to be paid back to the government within the next 5 years. As attorney explains, it is unclear where the government will get the staggering amount being given to the lawmakers.
Yeah, it will get them. Either non-oil revenue, what is not money in South Sudan, including water. You know, it is an art of just saving and then make sure that things work right if there is no war.
Mariel Awou, a professor of economics at the University of Juba, criticizes the move, saying it sends a wrong signal across the country.
If some people, I mean, are giving this money, then others would demand. They would put in their demand, and that will be an endless game. Everybody will be saying, we should be paid this, I should be paid this, I deserve to be paid this.
The move by the government comes amid an economic meltdown caused by South Sudan's five-year conflict. The World Food Programme says at least 3.8 million people, nearly half of the country's population, threatened by starvation, have fled their homes.
That report by Wake Simon Wudu, who is in South Sudan.
Yes, indeed. Now, Wanjiku, South Sudan has 400 members of parliament. And according to his report, each one of them receive or is expected to get a loan of $40,000 from the government to buy themselves cars. And these cars, I assume they are fuel guzzlers. Exactly.
Absolutely. And we're receiving lots of comments about this particular story.
Yes, because citizens, they're questioning why allocate such a whopping amount at a time when the country is facing economic meltdown. That's a question we put also on our Facebook page. And please, go ahead with the responses there.
Yes, indeed. Hussein Adam says, how large is South Sudan that it should have 400 MPs?
Chuks Ojodu says it's actually mind-boggling how a country like South Sudan, with a population of 12 million or so, has almost the same number of legislators as my country, which has a population of about 100 million plus. I think he's from Nigeria. That gives us an average of one MP for every 30,000 South Sudanese.
And we also have a comment coming in right now on our live page. Tani Form says, it's clear evidence that Africa is under a curse. How could people be suffering and living below the poverty line, yet you're giving $40,000 Kalons to MPs?
And Menti Vestberg has a good one. I weep for Africa. I will change Africa. It's a promise I must fulfill. Good luck, Westberg, wherever you are. Many thanks for that comment.
Yes, indeed. And remember, we also have the 77 debate where you can comment on this and more topics about how do you intend to change Africa, for example. Share with us. Share with the rest of young Africans on the continent. Eh? We have a comment from Jafar Ben who says leaders of Africa are criminals and mafia members and their headquarters are in other parts of the world.
And Habib Magola says, in Africa, it's for my family and my stomach. Many thanks for those comments. Keep the debate flowing. As usual, the place to be is our Facebook page, DW Africa. Don't go away. There's still much to come. And we'll be back right after this.
Health check.
Now, the government of Uganda wants to make compulsory HIV testing for teenagers and students in higher institutions of learning due to the rising numbers of new infections, mostly among the young people.
The government says this is to enable every young person living with the virus to start treatment and decrease on the further spread of the virus unknowingly. However, a section of Ugandans are saying this proposal will infringe on individual rights to privacy. From Kampala, Frank Iga sent this report.
This is 19-year-old Methia Nalukwago, a student of Makerere University in Kampala. She's excited by the proposal to have all students undergo compulsory HIV and AIDS testing. She tells me some of them have been living in denial.
Our friends, you study them, but you look at someone and you're like, this person, are you sure you're not sick or something like that? Of course, you never come out to tell them, but you feel it deep down inside you, this person might be sick because of the symptoms that show the compulsory testing for HIV. It will help us know where we stand, know our statuses.
At Forest Hill College in Mukono District, January, the head teacher tells me they are grappling with HIV in schools. She says the situation has been made worse by parents who mislead their children.
We have situations where parents lie to students about these drugs. Their parents will tell these children that they have other ailments other than HIV. The children don't know why they're taking the drugs. They don't know how important it is to take these drugs. So they're not taking the drugs as they're supposed to do. And at the end of the day, the effects of not taking the drugs properly start surfacing. Students are falling sick.
Uganda State Minister of Health for General Duties, Saro Pendi, tells me currently the policy does not allow testing children without parental consent, something the government needs to sort out first before embarking on compulsory testing.
We've seen children maybe even thinking of committing suicide. It's not just testing. We need to counsel these children and let them know that you can have the virus but still live a positive life.
Approximately 1.3 million Ugandans are living with HIV and about 800 contract the virus every week. That's 5 people every hour. The government believes introducing compulsory testing will enable students to access better treatment. However, Henry Atiku, one of the parents opposing this proposal, says students are likely to face stigma.
If those who are sick are not going to be treated separately from those who aren't sick, then why is it compulsory to test anyway? That means they are making a compulsory testing, not necessarily for statistics, but to find a way of handling those who have HIV. And these kids will know, and they will stigmatize or bully, actually, their colleagues.
However, Patrick Ojilong of Action Group for Health, Human Rights and HIV and AIDS Uganda, an organization that speaks for the rights of people living with HIV, tells me this move, if implemented by the government, will infringe on individuals' rights to privacy. He also warns that such a policy could have a negative outcome.
If you say compulsory, it means a health worker can come to a school. With or without your consent, he has the policy mandate to draw your blood, test for HIV immediately. If you do it with the compulsory mindset, how will you be certain that I know I will adhere to the treatment?
According to Uganda AIDS Commission, compulsory testing would help students know their HIV status, thereby making it possible to start treatment. The head of advocacy, Ruben Trinomjuni, tells me this would help the country reap from its test and treat initiative.
Much of their time they are at school, so if they go to that testing, it will help them. The school would help them to bring medication. The majority of the people who are affected by the virus are young people. So if that compulsory testing, if there was such a policy, it would help reduce some of these infections.
According to Uganda AIDS Commission, studies they have conducted in schools show lack of sufficient information and lavish lifestyle of some young people is contributing to an increase of HIV among youth.
Frankie Gay reporting from Kampala.
And we asked you, do you think this is a private matter or thumbs up to the government?
Bayo Jeremiah says thumbs up to the government. When care is not taken immediately to address the situation, the country will be hit by some death.
And Emmanuel adds, be very careful of the needle they will use to check your blood. These are the Judas of our time.
Many thanks for those comments. And as usual, it's time for sports, another dose of sports. Here's Samson O'Malley from Lagos.
We begin with results from the Africa's elite club competition. The Confederation of African Football Champions League played this weekend. Congolese giant Twa Pouzon Mazembe booked a spot in the last eight of the CAF Champions League after their 1-1 draw at Mouloudia Alger on Saturday, which ensures they will finish in the top two in Group B. On Friday, Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia became the first side to book a quarterfinal place in the CAF Champions League when they beat Mbaba and the Swallows of Swaziland 2-0 at home. Compatriot Esperance is also into the last eight after winning away in Uganda to ensure progression from Group A. Jeru Udo said there were no surprise results in this weekend's game.
Well, the usual suspects have made it to the next round. Talking about TP Mazembe of DR Congo, Esperance, and the Etoile du Sahel, both of Tunisia. These are the teams that we've known already in the continent. They are always making it to that level of the competition. So there were no major surprises as far as it's concerned. Though we still have about one or two rounds of matches to go. But of course, the teams that we expect to make it have made it through. So we want to give them kudos. And we hope others, like the teams from Nigeria and the teams from Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire and the rest, you also wake up. If the same teams keep doing the same thing every day, then we're not growing.
The next round of Champions League group games will be played on Friday, August 17th and Saturday, August 18th, when the balance of places in the knockout stage are expected to be settled. In athletics news, the city of Asaba Delta State in southern Nigeria is set to host Africa's best athletes in the Confederation of Africa Athletics organized Africa Senior Athletic Championship and will also serve as the selection event for the continent's team to the Intercontinental Cup in Ostrava. Ahead of the championship, I spoke with athletics writer Deji Ogembo, who tells me what Africa should expect when the African Championships gets underway from August the 1st to the 5th, 2018.
Kudos must be given to the Confederation of African Athletics for trying to make it very lucrative now. Overall, just four nations are expected to dominate: South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, and Cote d'Ivoire. So in what order they emerge tops, that's the question that we can't answer yet. We've seen a lot of breakout athletes use this sort of competition to get into the eye of the world. So it's crucial, and most countries take it serious.
Kenyan athletics is once again under the dark cloud of doping, with reports that sprinter Boniface Mwerisa has allegedly failed a dope test. Due to these, Mwerisa was ejected from the Team Kenya camp ahead of Africa Athletics Championships that starts on Wednesday next week in Nigeria. The sprinter, however, maintains his innocence. Speaking at the flag handover ceremony for the Asaba-bound athletes, Athletics Kenya president Jackson Tui lashed out at athletes over doping.
Is this where we want to go? Is this what we want to do? Why are we doping? How come not a single athlete, not a single official, not a single medic has ever come up to say we know who is giving these drugs?
Samson O'Malley with that report. And with that, we come to the end of this edition. On behalf of our colleagues in the studios, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
Bye for now.